Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these podcasts, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
DiscerningHearts.com presents St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, a religious community dedicated to retreats and spiritual formation, according to the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Father Gallagher is featured on several series on the EWTN television network, including Living the Discerning Life. He's the author of numerous books on the teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola, as well as on the teachings of Venerable Bruno Lanteri, founder of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Welcome back, Father Gallagher.
Thank you, Chris. I'm always happy to be here.
Where do we find ourselves now with this remarkable friendship, relationship that has given us an opportunity to reflect on some very important things?
Well, we've reached the point where Marie is 20 years old, Thérèse is 17, and Thérèse is in the Carmel as of about 2 years at this point, so she's in the early stages there. But growth is happening in a very beautiful way already in her religious life. And I'd say we enter a period of about 5 years in Marie's life, of course, Thérèse as well. And this would be from September 24th of 1890, which is the day when Thérèse receives the veil, the black veil, which is the sign of her perpetual profession. And Marie is present at the ceremony with the family, and grace is given to her in the course of that ceremony, and all of her vocational doubts are resolved. And she's very clear in her heart from that point on that God is calling her to Carmel. But it will be another 5 years, just a little less than 5 years, before Marie will enter. And that's the period that we're looking at right now. Marie returns from that ceremony, and the first one that she tells about her vocational conviction is Céline. Now, they have become very close at this point. Thérèse and the older sisters are in the Carmel, and these are the years of Louise's grave illness. And as I said before, this is the time when Céline really shines and comes to the fore, because she's the one that's carrying all of this with constant support from Thérèse. And we have the letters that Thérèse writes to encourage Céline. But Thérèse encourages Marie now to open her heart to Céline and find encouragement and support and strength there. And Marie does this. And she is extremely happy about this, no longer to feel so alone with the various burdens. We've touched on the scruples of various kinds and the burdens that she carries in her heart. But what is typical of her at this stage in her life is there's an excessive ardor in this. It becomes almost an attachment. And you get the sense that sometimes this gets a little burdensome for Céline, you know, to have this kind of neediness close to her. So the next thing I'm going to quote is a reflection on this situation. So that's the background of it, and both externally and in terms of Marie and her relationship with Céline. Now, this is a letter that Marie writes to Céline. So this is not to Thérèse, but to Céline. And this is on October 15th, 1890. So it's just a few weeks after that ceremony in which her vocation has become clear to her. And the background to it is that this is the bicentenary of the death of St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, who at that time was Blessed Margaret Mary Alacoque, a visitation sister. And so, of course, very dear to Léonie, who has already tried and failed to enter the visitation, but her heart is deeply set on it. And they are having a bicentenary celebration in Paray-le-Monial, which is where St. Margaret Mary Alacoque lived. And Léonie has her heart deeply set upon going there on pilgrimage, being present for that bicentenary. Celine doesn't really have any desire to go. She doesn't need crowds and she doesn't need all of this. But we have a letter from the older sister Marie, Therese's older sister Marie. I'll quote it here, where she's encouraging Celine to go with Léonie on this pilgrimage, because obviously Léonie can't go alone. And in point of fact, Celine will go. Three of their friends will go. Isidore will go, and also the priest who is the chaplain at the Benedictine Abbey, who is the confessor for Marie. Marie doesn't go on this pilgrimage. So she's back in Lisieux. Marie, the older Marie, writes this to Celine. It hurts to deprive poor Léonie, who wants so much to go to Paris. And poor Léonie, you know, that's Léonie. It's a very hard time in Léonie's life after these failures already to enter religious life. And then she says, "For you, my dear little sister," that's Celine, "your role has been and always will be to sacrifice yourself," because everyone knows, and Celine has said, that she really wants to be in the Carmel. The reason she's not in the Carmel is because of their father's situation and the need to take care of him, which obviously Léonie could never do. So Celine is in this situation where her heart is in the Carmel, but she's sacrificing herself, as Marie says, for the needs of their father. So Celine, somewhat unhappily, but to accommodate Léonie, agrees to go on this pilgrimage. And it's while they are away on this pilgrimage that Marie goes to the Carmel for a visit in the speak room with Therese. And this is certainly because October 15th is Therese's feast day, the feast of St. Teresa of Avila. So she has gone the preceding day for that visit, and now she's writing to Celine, who is at Paray, to describe what happened in that visit. "I was at the Carmel yesterday, and Therese began her visit by scolding me, gronde in the French, that is to chide, to scold, to reprimand. Why? Well, I think from what we've said, we can already see why. "Began her visit by scolding me, telling me that I was not sufficiently detached. You're too deeply emotionally attached to Celine that you can't even let her go for a few days on a pilgrimage. You need to be less attached than that." And then Marie says this to Celine. "She, Therese, does not understand that I am sad at having given you up for 5 days. However, I pointed out to her that I was sad because I knew you were unhappy." So Marie defends herself, saying, "If I'm sad, it's not because I'm deprived of Celine for these days, but because I know Celine didn't really want to go on that pilgrimage, and I'm sad for her." Well, how's Therese going to answer that? "She, Therese, answered that you, Celine, were much more detached than I am, and that you were not as sad as all that." Celine isn't suffering the way you think she's suffering, and she, in a healthy way, is more detached than you are emotionally. So, Marie says, "Then I told her she was heartless. I told her that she was une sans cœur." So you don't have any heart, you know. You know, Therese's response is difficult for Marie. Now, watch how Therese deals with this. "Then I told her she was heartless, and she closed the grill in my face, opening it again after a minute." Now, if you go on the website of the Carmel of Lisieux, you can find a picture there of this speak room. So you have the outer room, to which the visitors have access. It's a plain room with chairs. And then in the wall between that room and the room that the sisters enter from the cloister is a grill. So, you know, these vertical and horizontal thin metal bars. And there's actually even a curtain there as well, which would be rolled back for family members when they were visiting. And there's an inner shutter. So what Therese does, and the lightning speed of this is just, that's why I'm taking a moment on this, because it reveals something about Therese. So Marie has said to her, "You're heartless." So there's a heavy emotion in Marie. She's resisting what Therese is saying. And Therese just does something quickly that surprises Marie, that she's not ready for, that she doesn't quite know what to do with. And so she just closes the shutters so that they can no longer see each other. And she says for a minute, whatever that would be, you know, strictly speaking, but briefly. And then Therese opens them again. And then Marie says, both of us had a very nice visit. Bien bon. We had a very nice visit for 3/4 of an hour, which is also instructive because generally the visits were for a half hour. So Therese, probably sensing the need in Marie, prolongs the visit just a little bit longer. But what Therese does there is to diffuse an emotional impasse, so to speak, in a surprising way, which brings a bit of, as I say, both surprise and a bit of humor into this, but without backing down at all from what she's trying to say to Marie. And you see this repeatedly in Therese, this acute understanding of the person before her and how to respond to that person. In this case, a cousin, but who is overly emotionally needy at this point. And so Therese makes the point, all right, what she does is to mimic immediately what Marie says, you don't have any heart. So she immediately mimics it. She closes the shutter, you know, she pulls away, of course, then opens it again, and the visit goes on. So that that immediate mimicking of what Marie has said, in a sense, diffuses the situation, but without at all receding from her clear sense that Marie is showing herself too needy here. Because we've gotten on to this, these responses that Therese gives in various situations, I want to just briefly mention a couple more of them, this quality in Therese. And they're things that you don't see, actually, unless you read very attentively, and in some cases you can't see unless you see the French behind them. So this is in Last Conversations, July 10th, and Pauline is with Therese, and Pauline writes this down later on. And she says to Therese, they're in the infirmary, and she says to Therese, what you have written, now she's referring to the manuscripts that will become the story of a soul. What you have written could very well one day go to the Holy Father. And then this is how she gives us Therese's response to that. Laughing, et nunc et semper. Now, in English, that doesn't mean very much, but let's go back to the French and see, again, this lightning ability to respond in diffuse situations. So you've just been told that your book may someday be read by the Holy Father. All right, how are you going to respond to that? Well, et nunc et semper is from the Latin of the Glory Be. Gloria Patri et Filio et Spiritui Sancto, glory to the be to the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, sicut erat in principio, as it was in the beginning, et nunc et semper, now and always, literally both now and always, in saecula saeculorum, amen, for the ages unto the ages. As it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, we say in our English translation. Now, Therese knows the Latin of the Glory Be because they pray the Divine Office in Latin, which is about 4 hours, close to 4 hours of every day as they chant the office. And so you, at the end of every psalm, you recite, or in their case, they would chant the Glory Be. So this is completely familiar to her, the Latin of the Glory Be. So if we go to the French now, and what Pauline says to her is, that which you have written pourrait aller un jour jusqu'au Saint-Père. All right, Saint, Holy, Père, the Holy Father. And Therese immediately responds, et nunc et Saint-Père, you know, now and forever. But it's a play on Saint-Père, Saint-Père, you know. And that she could do this just so, you know, almost without, certainly without reflection. It's instinctive. It's a kind of pun. But it has the same focus of diffusing something a little bit in a way that's charming. And it's a quality that actually you see it frequently in Therese, but you really have to look for it because very often it's buried in the original language. And just one more of these, which takes place on July 9th, which is the preceding day. And again, this is Pauline. And here the pun carries over into English. So this is July 9th. They're a few days away from July 16th, which is the Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And then August 6th, which was the day that they would celebrate the Feast of the Holy Face, which is part of Thérèse's name. So Pauline says to her, "You will probably die on July 16, the Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, or on August 6, the Feast of the Holy Face." All right, how do you respond to that? So Thérèse plays on a punning on the word date. And this does work in English because date in English both means a day of the calendar and it also is a fruit. And in French, this works as well. Dat means the day of the calendar, and dat, pronounced the same but with double T, means date or the fruit. So Thérèse says, "Eat dates as much as you want," playing on the pun between the words. "I myself no longer want to eat any. I have been too much taken in by dates." So often people have said, well, this is the day that you'll die and so forth, and it's never happened, and she's just not going to play that game anymore. Mangez des dates tant que vous voudrez. So eat as many dates, fruits, as you want. I've eaten all I'm going to eat. J'ai été trop attrapé par les dates, in this case, meaning the day of the calendar. But that's just to give an insight into the kind of wit that Thérèse has, the quickness of it, and the way that she can make points with a little bit of surprise and a touch of humor that doesn't wound. And that's what you see here in Marie and her letter. In fact, you don't get a sense from Marie's letter, we haven't read the rest of it, that she comes out of that discouraged. In fact, she goes on to say, "We had a very nice, not just a nice, but a very nice conversation as that visit continued." All right, so we are in these years, 1891, 1892, and so forth. Marie is growing from 20 to 25. Her vocation becomes clear. Her parents, after some doubts about this because of her impulsivity, they are on board with this and they support it. The one who holds out the longest is Jeanne, her sister Jeanne, who is very firmly against this, and will be up until the time that Marie actually enters, and then things will change for Jeanne. During these years, in 1893, so Marie is 23 years at this time. This is when Léonie makes her third attempt to enter the Visitation. And this lasts for 2 years, from 1893 to 1895. And in what must have been, I would think, the very lowest point in Léonie's life, Léonie, after 2 years, and we've gone into this elsewhere, there's a change of leadership in the Visitation, and the regime gets much more strict, and Léonie, with her liabilities, is unable to manage this. She's not the only one. In fact, most, if not all, of her companions in the novitiate are also obliged to leave. But after 2 years in the Visitation, she returns home on July 20th of 1895. And just 3.5 weeks later, Marie will enter the Carmel. And you can just imagine what this has to mean for Léonie. All of them now are in the Carmel or married, her sister Jeanne. And she, Léonie, is the one who 3 times has tried and has failed. It's one of the striking things that in these years, and then shortly after her death, that many of Thérèse's family members were blessed in various ways, and it was very clear to them that this was the grace of Thérèse. In fact, Léonie would always be very clear on this, that the grace that was given to her when she entered the fourth time, and this is after Thérèse's death, and which she was able to stay until her own death, so 41 years in the Visitation, and that life of holiness that we know, that was very much due to Thérèse and her intercession and her prayers, because she knew that Thérèse had always firmly believed in her, Léonie's, vocation to the Visitation. Now, in 1893... there is talk of Marie's entering at this point when she's 23. And the plans are underway, but then her health intervenes at this point. And she suffers an attack of influenza, which weakens her health to such a degree that it will only be 2 years later that Marie will finally be able to enter the Carmel. It's also during these years, when Marie is now 24, this is July 9th, 1894, that Louis dies. And he dies at Lamuse during the summer, so July 29th there at Lamuse. In fact, we have a letter from Marie the following year. It was her last time to visit Lamuse, because that was in August, the year that she would enter the Carmel. And she describes to Céline just walking through the various places where Louis spent his time, his room, the place where he would sit outdoors and so forth, and just with deep, moving memories of him, she describes all of this. And just a note on Louis and Marie at Lamuse. He loved to hear Marie sing. In fact, he called her his nightingale. You know, he had nicknames for all of his own daughters. And as we've said before, Marie had an exceptionally beautiful soprano voice. She sang in a lovely way, and she was very gifted as a pianist as well. And he often would ask her to play what was his favorite piano piece. And you can look this up on YouTube. You can find versions of it. It's called Reverie, and it's by the French composer Henri Rosselen, Rosellen. Died in 1876, so very much a contemporary of Louis, and very popular in his lifetime. And it's a piece for one piano. You can listen to it. It's a lovely piece, and you could just imagine Marie playing that piece for Louis, which he loved to hear. He dies on July 29th, 1894. 6 weeks later, September 14th, 1894, Céline enters the Carmel. And at this point, that close connection between Marie and Céline will undergo a change, and you begin to get letters now between the two of them. And this brings us to the summer of 1895, when Marie is now 25 years old, and her final stay at Lamuse, which ends on August 6th, and it's just a couple of weeks before she will enter the Carmel. We have one final letter of Thérèse to Marie before Marie enters, and so I'm going to read it really, because it just reflects these last weeks that Marie spends with her family before she enters Carmel. Her entrance is set for August 15th, November 19th, and so forth. They all have feast days, and Marie's is August 15th, so they set her entrance into Carmel on her feast day. So that day will have a double meaning for her going forward, both her feast day and also the anniversary of her entrance into Carmel. This is not really a letter. It may have been written on the back of a picture or something like that that Thérèse sends to her, because there's no initial salutation and then a conclusion at the end of it. So Thérèse says this to Marie. To my dear little sister, from her little Thérèse, who is thinking very much of her. So that's underlined, thinking very much of her. And she knows that Marie, her heart will be gladdened to know that. Again, this is the emotionally rich and sometimes overly needy Marie. So who is thinking very much of her, and who above all, so what is it that Thérèse is most concerned about and in these final weeks before Marie enters, and who above all is hoping, and in parentheses, while trembling, en tremblant in French, who is hoping while trembling, in other words, I'm not quite so sure how this is going, is hoping while trembling that her dear Marie is keeping to her promises, remaining as calm as a little child in its mother's arms. So Thérèse's fear is that there'll be emotion pouring out all over the place from Marie that will just make things very difficult for the family. And the promises that she mentions suggest to us that earlier Thérèse has asked her not to do that, but to remain emotionally calm. She says here, as a little child in its mother's arms, so that these final weeks are not a time of difficulty for the family. I am praying very much for you, dear little sister, and for all the dear inhabitants of Lamuse, which is where she is right now, who must be making at this moment rapid progress in perfection, since they are accepting so generously the sacrifice of the separation. I love and pray, those two words are underlined, I love and pray for dear uncle and dear aunt more and more, also underlined. I do not know how far this will go, since my affection is growing each day. Which is something that Therese says, and we'll also see Marie say. It's, yeah, if outside of Carmel, you this is something that people don't understand. They think that you separate yourself from your family, so there's less of a bond, less of a connection. In fact, just the opposite happens, that the love grows stronger and stronger when you're in the Carmel like this.
We'll continue our conversation with Father Gallagher in our next episode. You've been listening to St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher. Be sure to check out the comprehensive summary and reflection questions contained in the show notes for this episode. To download this particular episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, which is to offer authentic and rock-solid spiritual formation freely to souls around the world. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax-deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher.